Ever wondered if that UFO sighting was a secret government project?
Not because they didn't go to the moon, but because they seen something on the moon they weren't supposed to.
Or if ancient civilizations really had alien architects.
Like, so Roswell, obviously they think they recovered crafts and beings.
On Theorist Theorizing, wild speculation meets seasoned storytelling.
How they dug 2 kilometers below these pyramids and created all the structures that we're now finding.
Join the theorists as they dive into UFOs, cryptids, government cover-ups, true crime, and the weirdest theories the internet and humanity has to offer.
Giza and the pyramids itself being an energy source, you know?
It's not a lecture. It's a round table of curiosity, comedy, and what if.
Maybe they got tipped off by these U-boats that fled to Argentina, that there was something there.
Theorist Theorizing. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Art Slice is a different dive into art history. We goof around, we curse, you learn from it, but don't expect a typical lecture. You're welcome. At first glance, Rosa Rolanda's surrealist works don't seem like they were painted almost a century ago. Self-portraits with eyes and brows and lime eyeshadow, almost identical to my childhood Bratz dolls.
A little bit Bratz dolls, a little bit Butterfly by Crazy Town.
So many butterflies.
Yeah. This old ass CGI looking way better than AI. I'm just gonna say it.
Yep. Someone called a school nurse. This video is sick.
Oh my God.
It's sick.
I mean, that's kind of era appropriate medical, considering like Blink 182.
It needs light medical attention. Like, don't call 911.
Right.
Like, just the school nurse.
Yeah. Just the enema of the state.
Yeah. Exactly. Flower crown adorned children stare back at you, giving Yoshimoto Nara judgmental eyes.
A mixture of symbolism, at times specific and at times magically vague. Orchid bows, a 16th century flower crown, a little Giotto-inspired fly.
Children with basalt Olmec stone faces.
Rosa is capturing that past dreaming, forward-looking anamoya, or a feeling of nostalgia for a time or place that someone has never experienced.
In Self-Portrait from 1939, meticulous oil paint strokes weave together symbols of Mexican identity. A surreal, otherworldly backdrop, a cathedral nestled amongst Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl, two volcanoes named after the Aztecs Romeo and Juliet. We have a butterfly fluttering across her collarbone, hinting at a metamorphosis completed.
And Rosa herself had gone through a bit of a metamorphosis. Mm-hmm. From B-list actress, A-list Broadway dancer, surrealist to, finally, a cultural storyteller and painter. And in the process, Rosa was discovering her own heritage.
To Anamoya Slice, I'm Stephanie Duenas. This is Russell Shoemaker.
R.I.P. Shifty.
R.I.P.
So important.
Yes.
So important to me.
Right. So today we are diving into Rosa Rolanda, inspired by our multiple chance encounters with her works. We first saw Girl with Doll back in Boston in 2019, which was on display with Arte Popular trinkets Frida Kahlo had collected, kind of positioning it as folk art.
But it also had like folk art objects in the painting.
Yeah, it did.
So kind of meta.
Yes,
kind
exactly.
Of peak meta for 2019, which is maybe past meta's prime.
Possibly.
Past the meta prime, but still peak meta.
Either way, we were struck by it.
Yeah, we lingered. It was a very smart composition. At the time, in the context with the other works included, we didn't think to look more into Rosa because, first of all, we weren't making the show.
Right.
But also, the way they positioned it in the exhibition made it seem like it was maybe just some like random folk art Frida had collected.
Yeah. Then last year in Ciudad de Mexico,
Mexico City.
Ciudad de Mexico, yeah. We ran across another lovely work of hers at the Museo de Arte Moderno, along with famous Mexican surrealists like Remedios Varo and Leonora Carrington. And then only a month or two later, we ran into her yet again. That stunning Bratz Dolls and Crazy Town music video-esque self-portrait at the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, which is when we finally put all of the pieces together. We were like, this is that same artist from Boston and Mexico City? Like, what? And then as we do, we tugged on that thread, not expecting much. And then we just ended up unraveling like a whole ass life story that just really blew our little socks off.
Yeah, our red socks.
Our little red socks.
For the Boston Red Sox. Apparently stringy because we've been pulling on the threads.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. A lot of holes.
Thread worn Boston Red Sox socks.
Threadbare.
Yeah. Okay. Threadbare. Thank you.
Is it thread worn? I don't know.
I don't know.
Rosa was a dancer, an actress, and a photographer.
She was featured in one of the most formative surrealist magazines.
And she exhibited in the MoMA.
She also had her own solo show in the gallery Sousa.
And she's also in Diego Rivera's Sueño de una tarde dominical en la Alameda Central. So we were like, what the hell, what's going on?
Yeah.
How have we never heard of this Renaissance woman? So much so that we reached out to Mexican art historian, author, curator, podcaster, and cultural content creator, Becca Duncan. And she offered a ton of insight that we could not find anywhere else, which really grounded this time and place in history. So in the next episode, Becca is going to fill us in on not only Rosa Rolanda's life, but also her husband's, artist polymath Miguel Covarrubias, because, as we will get into, their influence on one another's work is inextricable.
Mm. And you should see that on your podcast or YouTube feed on November 4th.
So you're saying it will be out on
November 4th?
Yes.
November 4th. Or 6th.
But you can sign up for our algorithm-free newsletter at artslicepod.com and we'll let you know when it's out, which will probably be
November 4th or 6th.
Anyway, back to Rosa.
Rosa came to these visions by following her passions, taking artistic risks in dance, in photography, and in art. And because of that, she lived a life that very few Westerners would dare to live. Mm-hmm. She would find herself surrounded by everyone from Man Ray to Frida Kahlo to Fred and the Del Astaire. Mm-hmm. She hadn't set out to become this like visual artist, but she found her way there later in life.
In that serene self-portrait with the Y2K butterfly and Aztec lore volcanoes we fell in love with at Crystal Bridges, we began to see her work as her personal link to both the past and future of Mexico, an identity that she was unraveling, creating a style that was surreal, unique to the time she lived, and yet somehow timeless. Rosa was born in 1895 as Rosamund Cowan to a Mexican-American mother and a Scottish papa, not in a beautiful Mexican villa overlooking Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl, you know, those volcanoes,
yeah.
But in Azusa, a Los Angeles burb in the San Gabriel Valley.
Overlooking a strip mall, Stephanie, with a Smart and Final.
Not well.
With a Food for Less.
Not
a Food
for Less, not yet. Yeah. Not yet. Not quite.
Overlooking a twinkle in some bulk mogul grocer's eye.
Possibly.
The twinkle said it has Smart and Final in there. And Food for Less.
Shiny. Okay. Yeah. All right. The yellow.
Yeah.
The yellow logo.
The oppressive yellow of Food for Less.
Food for Less.
Yeah. The very oppressive yellow color.
I love Food for Less. That is a nostalgic. That's what my dad says it. Oh, fui a la Food for Less. I love it. Tells me all the like sale tequila
does the,
he
does
finds.
The yellow bother him too?
No,
okay.
Couldn't care about the yellow. Couldn't care less about the yellow.
Yeah.
It's a special yellow to me. Anyway, Azusa was still developing, mm-hmm. and its slight population meant that there was no art scene, mm-hmm. no Hollywood, but also no smog,
yeah.
no Vons, no smog, no traffic.
Okay.
There was lots of dust, though. Mostly dust.
All right. What about big lots?
Some dreams. Okay. Some hopes. And again, dust. But fortunately, there was also a nearby arts high school where Rosa excelled at sculpture, jewelry making, costume design, and the art form she would become renowned for.
Stephanie used to be a dancer, folks.
I was.
You check out those cool dance moves.
As you can tell. And so while this was a natural fit for Rosa,
mm-hmm.
you know, she still had to work at it, right? You have to work mm-hmm. to be good. After some time, she found she was able to click into that flow, right? Mm-hmm. That rhythm and movement. And if you recall from our recent episodes on Modern Woman, the lost mural of Mary Cassatt, and our recent interview on The Club with Jennifer Dazzle, we are only about 10, 20, maybe 30 years removed from that restrictive Victorian era dress situation, mm-hmm. where middle and upper class women were encouraged to participate in the arts only to become more attractive to potential male suitors.
Mm.
which was something that Cassatt wanted. So this was something that Cassatt railed against and dedicated at least one third of her mural to, in the form of young barefoot Eves wearing loose, non-corseted dresses, frolicking outdoors and dancing freely with their Eve friends, which was a striking contrast to her best worst friend, Edgar Degas ballerinas, in their stiff clothing, painful footwear, and physically demanding balance and precision. I did ballet, I would know, also. Okay. Yeah. Very painful.
Explains the dance moves.
But that was not ballet.
Okay.
That was jazz contemporary. Yeah.
No, I mean, you looked really controlled. You looked like you had, you know, a form that you practiced for years.
Anyway.
I can tell the years of expertise behind that. What is that, the 10,000 hours you need to master something?
You should see me with my tap shoes. And as we discussed in the club, the generation of women who followed Cassatt had more freedom, but they still had to fight hard just to be respected, not only in the arts, but also broader society.
You said broad. I think it's interesting that you said broad.
I like
it's
the word
broad. It's an
interesting
word choice when we're talking about women.
I like broad.
It says a lot about you and how you think about women. Who, it's okay.
Raise your hand if you like broad. The word broad. Broad City. Hi. You like the word broad?
Yeah.
Why am I being judged?
Broads and dames. Broad? Gals.
Look, you can take it back. We're taking that word back. Yeah. I like broad. You can call me a broad. I won't get upset.
All right, broad. Let's go.
Broad-shouldered broad. Yeah. Okay. So, so Rosa is kind of the third wave of this womanly art movement. Mm. And she was far removed from those East Coast and European standards. The acceptance of looser, less restrictive California cool clothing.
Like literally cool for the warmer California, Southern California environment.
Sure.
Sun beating down on you.
You also need room to have all that in and out. You need that unrestricted clothing for the
stretchy clothing.
So more and more women had been educated cross-continentally, and they can pass that knowledge down to these younger California cool Eves. So all of these art movements, including dance, were expanding. They were opening up.
They're broadening.
Yes, you could say they were broadening. Mm-hmm. One of said teachers happened to be Marion Morgan, whose Morgan Dancers.
Marion Morgan's Morgan's Dancers.
Marion Morgan's dancers? Morgan Dancers.
Morgan Dancers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Marion Morgan's Morgan Dancers.
Because
her last name is Morgan. Or would it be possessive? Morgan's Dancers. Marion Morgan's Morgan's Dancers.
No.
They're the Morgan Dancers?
Marion Morgan's Morgan Dancers.
Confusing.
It's not.
It's very confusing.
So the Morgan Dancers often
Morgan's
worked
dancers.
Barefoot, and they wore gauzy outfits that allowed for more fluid movements, inspired from everything from Egyptian to Greek to Southeast Asian. And while this required athletic rigor and was physically taxing, it wasn't as sadistic as ballet.
It was also a little culty. They were required to be vegetarians or vegans. They couldn't have coffee.
Sometimes they did practice Christian Science.
Or alcohol. Yeah, Christian Science, which I think is no science.
Dancing was also one of the few ways that a woman could make a living on her own. So Rosa, wiping the dust from her eyes and sensing the world of opportunities, thought, maybe I ought to trade all of this Azusa dust for some city soot. Mm. So she proceeded to compete and win an ultra prestigious spot with those Marion Morgan's dancers. Mm-hmm. See, she's only run one right there. And thus Rosa would leave dusty Azusa behind for the big stage and bright lights of New York City. New York City. New life, new city, New York City.
New York City.
New York City, new name. Obviously, the change of scenery called for a name change. Rosemond officially shortened her name to Rose.
Dusty Rose.
That's what they called her in New York.
Yeah.
Dusty Rose. Hey. So she shortened her name to Rose and adopted a distant relative's last name, maybe, as the story goes, Roland.
Okay.
So she is now Rose Roland.
Not Rosa Rolanda.
You know, she made a lot of changes to her name over the years and actually made her death certificate process a nightmare.
Okay.
But just trust. She eventually...
Why are you tracking down her death certificate?
I just happened upon that information.
Okay.
I just happened upon that information upon my research.
Yeah, it's fine.
Anyway, she does eventually become Rosa Rolanda, but sometimes she's also Rosa Rolanda Covarrubias. Sometimes Rosa Covarrubias, more on that in a minute. She's young, she works, she dances her ass off, mm-hmm. and soon debuts on Broadway alongside other... That's how she rises to the shade. Yeah. She rises up in her dust cloud onto mm-hmm. the Broadway stage alongside up-and-coming dancer extraordinaires, like you said, Fred and Adele Astaire. Mm-hmm. And she also performed abroad, also choreographing, designing costumes, and performing solo. Broadway.
You said Broadway again, yeah.
Broadway.
Yeah.
You start keeping Italian.
Okay.
All right. So through her multitude of skills and side hustles, Rosa was really making a name for herself. Mm. But not only was she extremely talented, she was also a social butterfly. And for the 1910s, she was also alluringly exotic.
Making the press go all Ed Roth, Rat Fink, crazy eyes, you know, revving their engines, revving their horny engines.
Horny?
Yeah.
Ooh, is that... Yeah, wait.
Honking the horn.
That's crazy. Look.
The big amphetamine eyes. They're honking their horns. They're horny horns. That's where it comes from. That's where the name comes from.
Okay.
They're really excited.
I'm not
really excited about
this
Scottish-Mexican woman.
You know what?
In a sheer... What'd you say? In a glistening sheer...
Gauzy. I'm not going to say that she wasn't taking advantage of that she okay. wasn't thirst trapping, but she definitely made some neck whip and some heads turn.
Some awoogas awooga.
Yes. The critics would remark on her Aztec blood mm-hmm. and her golden brown-hued body. Pretty wild. I feel like we're heading back there as a society where, like, that's okay to print the fact that you're saying a dancer...
like a mole poured over a bowl of haggis.
What is haggis?
Just a high concept fusion mix. You know what I'm talking about? A lesser chef couldn't handle it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
All right.
Some fusion up in here. Races mingling. Fusing.
Fusing. Why not? Rosa was making friends and cartoon-wolfied fanboys of her peers, artists, designers, at least one cheetah, and those critics. One of those fanboys being fellow estadounidense, American, artist Man Ray, who photographed her while she was performing in Paris, probably enamored with her anti-ballet pseudo-dada dance moves. Mm.
Ran May had just recently shifted away from making awkward Fauvist cubist paintings and was on the cusp of discovering those thought-provoking, borderline vexing photographs he is now known for.
Mm-hmm. When Man Ray was like, Hey, Rosa. Voulez-vous come upstairs and see my cameraless photographs?
Oh, Guy Laser.
I call them... Guy Laser.
Guy Laser.
I call them areographs.
Mm.
She said we. She said we. And she was actually struck by their strange beauty, the areograms, not anything else.
Mm.
Because rheographs were actual.
You know, Man Ray was a nice... He seems like, you know, I watched some interviews with him. He seemed like a nice elderly man. He seemed like a pleasant man. And you're saying he's trying to advance on Rose Roland.
Yeah.
I think he was. Trying to make a move on her.
Rheographs were actually just a rebranded photogram.
Oh, there they are, Stephanie.
There they are. Look at them.
Little Pantermons are hungry. Let's go to the Art Slice pantry.
Vamos.
Photograms are a type of cameraless photography that often seem like they have more in common with painting or drawings rather than photographs. They have a long history dating back to 1835 when William Henry Fox Talbot first created what he called tallotypes, after his name, obviously. Or they were also known as photogenic drawings, which were printed atop paper treated with silver chloride. Talbot himself had built upon the much earlier inventions of the camera obscura and light reactive silver nitrate, which had a similar effect but wasn't really permanent, kind of disappeared shortly after being printed upon, like the sands of time, because I imagine it was like a silver nitrate sort of sand sort of situation that just didn't stick to the paper. I actually don't know. And by foregoing a camera obscura and placing objects like fern fronds on top of that paper doused in light-sensitive chemicals, then exposing it to the sun, he captured articulate negative white shapes surrounded in sepia-looking washes. Ooh, Instagram filter from the early 2000s, something I would know. So sensitive, so ready, so willing and able to be decoupaged. Anna Atkins, a British botanist, would take this to the next level with beautiful collections of plant or algae clippings atop that cool blue hue that you might recognize from those cyanotype art projects in high school. Eventually, when those Dadaists and Surrealists got a hold of this process, they put their own the automatismic spin on them using found objects, arrangements, and movement to create this almost ethereal X-ray-looking parallel world. Man Ray, in particular, layered up psyche-shattering textures, hypnotic rhythms, and smoky depths, which created this irrational versus rational tension. So much so that he, like Talbot, felt like he could rename them Rayographs. I guess there's just a ton of branding opportunities with cameraless photographs. You can easily and cheaply try this out at home with some inexpensive cyanotype chemicals and a pair of gloves to protect your hands. Or if you're a golden-aged Bart Simpson or just maybe have access to a late 90s / early 2000s Kinko's, first of all, call me. I miss them. They used to be 24 hours. You could just visit at any time. And that was fun. You can experiment with moving and arranging objects on a copy machine or scanner bed while they are printing or scanning for a similar effect. Stephanie, our little pantry mons, have been satiated once again, kind of sleeping at her feet.
Yes.
A little heap right here.
Yes.
Hard, I'm trying not to step on them.
Heap of fur.
Yeah.
What was that?
It was one of the pantry mons.
Okay, you stepped on
them. Did you see my mouth move? That's weird. Weird
that
it's
weird.
Yeah. Weird that would do that.
Mighty strange.
Strange.
Mighty strange.
These really resonated with Rosa. The mixture of planning, experimentation, happy accidents, and selecting for the best results probably didn't seem too far off from the mixture of intense practice, improvisation, and flow states that are required for dancing.
Right.
It's also very, very likely, but not confirmed, that Ombre Rayo showed her the photogram process.
Yeah.
Kind of let her in to the photogram process. Rosa could freely explore connections, rabbit holes, and whims.
Right.
And another benefit of meeting Dude Beams was that she got to witness the ground floor of surrealism when it was still this kind of like
dirty,
pure idea, pure for, not dirty, pure,
everywhere.
Before the litmus test, before the cigarettes, before the manifesto, before the fraternity, before the kicking out of Rene Magritte.
Oh, yeah, that's okay? Right. Yeah. So Rosagrams.
Book it, got it.
Rosagrams felt like personal elaborate doodles that you might make on the margins of your notebook.
Yeah, mixed with like Xeroxed punk show posters.
But like whimsical.
Yeah, very like shadow puppet caught in a zine or zine.
Oh.
Some people say zine.
Okay.
With the kind of authority that makes me think I'm saying zine wrong.
Listeners, let us know. Is it zine or zine?
Yeah.
I think it's zine. Her Rolandrams used her drawings, but also a variety of objects like pins, a sun, and of course a butterfly, even featuring a cherished Chinese fawn made of jade from her travels, but also more utilitarian objects like glasses, utensils, and even fruit, specifically an apple. Mm. So pretty much anything that might create an interesting form or texture. And then she left the rest up to El Sol and chance. I really love these. There's something about these like that remind me of my school days, right? Mm. Especially, you know, me making doodles during my biology class when I was supposed to be paying attention.
Okay.
It's charming. It reminds me of my childhood.
Mm. It's like a connection to that childhood.
Yeah.
You know,
I love it.
That husk self.
The husk self. Yes.
Yeah.
The young artist husk.
Mm. We were just a ball of hormones forming in a husk.
But artsy. But artsy.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the European leg of her dancing tour ended in 1924, and Rosa, heads back to New York City. Probably donning a beret.
Confirmed.
Yes. This time, meeting another fanboy of sorts, the Mexican set designer, artist, illustrator, and future anthropologist, Miguel Covarrubias, nicknamed El Chamaco, or the kid, because he was only 20 or so at this time.
9 years, her chamaco.
Yeah. Rosa was smitten, and they would actually work together on the Broadway production, Rancho Mexicano.
Mm-hmm.
Rosa co-starred and choreographed while El Chamaco designed the set. Mm-hmm. Now, while this wasn't their production, per se, this was the beginning of their working relationship.
They were producing something.
Also,
production.
This would be the beginning of their relationship, like,
yeah,
for real.
Right.
Which would change the course of their whole lives.
I think you mean change the tides of their whole ass lives. Listeners, friendly listeners, Stephanie knew of this photograph that we are now showing you, that I'm about to show you, for about a year and kept it from me. And I had to discover it for myself. And when I actually showed it to her, very proud of this discovery, this episode-changing discovery. She was like, quote unquote, yeah, I know. I didn't think it was important to the story, end quote.
No,
Stephanie, would you like
it.
To describe the photograph?
I know. I chuckled. It's okay.
Stephanie, please
describe
the photograph.
It brought me a moment of joy. It's a faux backdrop of a boat, a painted faux backdrop of a boat, and Miguel and Rosa are sitting in it.
Yeah, to give the illusion that they are rowing their boats gently across the ocean.
Yes.
Miguel does not look excited.
No.
Rosa,
he does not want to be the Rosa.
At best, looks slightly amused.
She is a model and a dancer, and she knows how to put it on.
Exactly. I think they're having a little fight.
You think they're having a fight that day?
Like, a little romantic
Miguel,
quarrel.
Get in the boat.
Yeah.
Get in the boat.
He doesn't want to do it. He's like, what? Am I supposed to hold this ruler?
You mean the
And she's like, I thought you were Chamaco. I thought you were the kid. I thought you'd appreciate the boy-like whimsy of getting into a fake faux boat and taking a photograph with me.
Okay.
And then they can only make one shot. I mean, back then, you know, it's not like you can just reel off 50 photographs.
That's true. It was all or nothing. So, all right.
I thought it was important.
I
thought it was as important as when we found Marcel's photograph in Maria Marcin's studio.
A beautiful glamour shot of Marcel's dome. Yes. So hope you can forgive me.
I'll try.
Okay. All right. So this is where.
You know what? I think we should pose. That's what I think. I think we should pose for a boat photograph. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll make. Oh, right now.
Yeah. Come on.
Rosa, I'm really sorry. That was a terrible impression of you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is when Rosa and El Chamaco cultivated this charmed life. Miguel just had a curiosity about him and a love of culture that rivaled Rosa's. When Rosa would finish a matinee of performances, she would meet him in Chinatown for dinner and drinks, or they would soak up the music scene of the Harlem Renaissance, while Miguel furiously sketched the near acrobatic dances like the Lindy Hop, as seen here in this gorgeous lithograph. One of the most important worlds Miguel would introduce Rosa to was that of her mother's homeland, Mexico, a country that, at this time, was in that time we keep coming back to, the discovery of its own past and future.
After decades of Spanish colonization, stop me if you've heard this before, listeners, we're going to go through it again, and a long, bloody revolution, Mexico was embracing left-ish-leaning populism and wanted to try their hand at bringing the country together. Artists were bankrolled for public works, usually large-scale murals like those of Diego Rivera or José Clemente Orozco. This served two goals for the people of Mexico. First, as a history lesson, revealing their pre-Columbian past that was buried by colonialism in vast, untapped jungles. And secondly, as a radical vision for the future that all Mexicans could have a mano in creating. It was common for artists at this time to move to, like, settle in locations that were more accepting of their artistic ways, their artistic temperaments, their auras. And for Mexico City,
Ciudad de Mexico.
Their openness to the arts meant foreign artists like Leonora Carrington, Remedios Varo, Alice Rayon, and many, many more would eventually move there.
Like we've covered in The Three Witches and in Diego and Frida.
Posadas, to some extent, too.
Yes. And that whole rediscovery of the Aztec or the Mexica and the Mayans, combined with the supernatural version of Catholicism that had developed to rival said indigenous gods of those aforementioned cultures, and an undercurrent of brujería, made Mexico feel like a true home for them.
And while the leader of the surrealist André Breton only visited, to him, Mexico personified surrealism. Quote, Mexico, half awake of its mythological past, keeps evolving under the protection of Xochipli, goddess of flowers and lyrical poetry, and Coatlicue, goddess of the earth and of the violent death. This power of conciliation of life and death is without a doubt the principle attractive that Mexico offers. This keeps an open record of endless sensations from the most benign to the most insidious. Basically, he saw a history buried in the collective subconscious, awaiting to awaken.
So Rosa and her esposo Chamaco relocate to Ciudad de Mexico.
Mexico City.
Ciudad de Mexico. And actually become the first Mexican artist power couple in the city. Yes, even predating Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera. Rosa's charm immediately ingratiated her to those highly influential art circles, becoming very close friends with Frida Kahlo, Artist transplants like Edward Weston and Tina Madotti, and even visitors like Nicholas Murray. And you can immediately see the influence of these artists on Rosa, like her dance performances, which would borrow from other established forms, flamenco one day and Samoan the next, or even her Rolandzadrams.
Rosalandrams.
Yeah. It sounds like a drug you see on TV. Mm-hmm. Rosalandrams. Learning from them and translating them into her own vision. And that extended to culture as well. Rosa began to wear traditional Tehuana resplandors and huipils before Frida Kahlo, which was a surprise to us, actually. She seemed to be genuinely interested in all sorts of cultures, especially their clothing and wares.
Yep.
Is what I would have said had I not read about her very cringe parties where she made the catering staff cosplay as indigenous. And, you know, a generous read would be that it was misguided, but well intended.
Also, like, just the time and place, too. I'm not sure we can. It's fair.
It's not
to hold her to our current standards.
Yeah, but like, oh, my God, it's still giving Gwen Stefani's Harajuku girls.
Her Tehuana Juku girls.
So I relate to Rosa more than I actually first realized when it comes to identity, actually more than any other artist that we've covered. But Rosa cosplaying as indigenous, I think, was more her celebrating and being proud of her heritage, right? So Hold on. So her mom was a small child when she moved to the U.S. Okay, so I think that direct connection to Mexico was lost, right? Because she was literally removed from it, and then God knows in those days you didn't find much
in Azusa.
Mexico. She was in Azusa, right? Wait.
Our culture is smart and final.
Okay. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
So my parents, they came to the U.S. as young adults. And as a kid, they would take me back, visit the old town, right? They would dress me up in like a little huaracita outfit, if you know, you know, which I'm sure has indigenous roots, but the tradition was never explained to me. My dad once in a while would share like bits here and there, but otherwise, I never really got much,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
I also think it's a little more complicated in Mexico because of colonization.
Yeah.
And that whole history. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and and assimilation and stuff. But also, like, I don't think that was the case for me necessarily. Sorry, I love you, parents. But but if I was to have discovered, you know, more about my heritage as an adult, I think I would have had the reaction that Rosa is having. If it wasn't 2025. You know what I mean? I know where she's coming from.
Yeah.
It's a place of love. Rosa had been interested in Indonesian dance since the Marion Morgan dancer days. And so for her and Miguel's honeymoon, she was like, hey, why don't we go to Bali?
Yeah. Right? Not so easy to get to at that point.
Right. And not so well known.
And not any, I think, AK yoga retreats, little flower baths.
No.
That are, you know, good for social media.
That kind of money and situation was unheard of.
In fact, I don't even know if they had a Hilton back then, Stephanie. What are we going to do? They probably didn't have a Hilton.
Oh, no. Whatever did they do?
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to Miguel and Rosa, this trip would completely change the trajectory of their lives.
The tide, yeah. Tide of,
sure.
A little boat.
Actually, they did get there on a boat.
Yeah, they did.
Anyway.
See, that's why it was important to mention.
I guess you're right. Yeah. All right. So going to Bali for their honeymoon inspired a much longer return visit for like months and months at a time where Miguel and Rosa would fully immerse themselves.
Yeah. Their charm and shared love of art and dance meant that the Balinese people opened up to them, showing them things they would not share with outsiders. Their traditional music, dance, art, and religion and rituals. Once again, not just as like distant scientific observers, but as actual participants in those events. El Chamaco would spend his time writing an exhaustive document of the lives of these people well before World War II, modernization, Hiltons, and tourism would change Bali forever.
Rosa especially was able to make meaningful connections with the Balinese women, which can be seen in the hundreds of gorgeous, intimate photographs that she captured, which, when compiled with Miguel's writings and illustrations in a book about Bali in 1937, it earned both of them critical acclaim.
And this was considered like the book on Bali, and I think it sometimes still is considered the book on Bali, or at least it's referenced a lot.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
There was nothing like this at the time.
Right.
There's also a beautiful documentary you can find, I think, on archive.org if you really want to dig into this more. Mm-hmm.
She would continue to collaborate with Miguel, opening up a dance school in Ciudad de Mexico.
Mexico City.
Ciudad de Mexico. In another anthropological book, Mexico South, the Isthmus, the Isthmus of Tehuantepec.
Rosa would also help Miguel with his massive Pacific murals. You can see photographs of her working on them. Mm-hmm. We're going to cover that in the next episode. Mm-hmm. And Rosa actually would continue to take photographs, but she also started to paint mm-hmm. in 1927. Yeah. She painted mostly self-portraits, mm-hmm. children, floral still lifes, as well as famous friends like Golden Age Mexican movie stars.
Dolores del Río and María Félix.
Thank you. Some were commissioned and then lost. Mm-hmm. Her photos also have been lost to time. A lot of them, thousands of them, are unprocessed and just sitting somewhere that we don't know where they are. So Rosa's works were included in the occasional group exhibition, and she actually did have one solo exhibition later in life, but she really preferred to give away her works as gifts to friends, which is how we stumbled across her paintings in Frida Kahlo's collection. Mm-hmm. Coming full circle.
So it's true that she certainly was overshadowed by Miguel's prolific career, partially by choice, and partially it was due to the times, which, with a few exceptions, considered men more serious artists.
But it's clear if you really look at her work, while seemingly simplistic on the surface, they are much deeper and more compositionally dynamic than what they appear on first glance. And you know we love our fibrous art, the slow-to-digest art. We like art that you can chew on. Art that introduces gut flora to your digestive system. Okay. We like that kind of work.
All right. Now, more and more, we are finally seeing Rosa's paintings included in exhibitions, giving her the credit she deserved all along. So, let's get into some of our favorites. Rosa's self-portrait from 1945 appears, on first glance, like the self-portrait of a demure, age-appropriate Bratz doll with an Oncidium species orchid in her hair.
It's deceivingly simple, but grappling with something existential. Painted in gouache with like the teeny tiniest layers, brush strokes, like layered up, mm-hmm. more like what you'd expect from like a colored pencil drawing or like mm-hmm. a pastel
yeah.
on paper.
Yeah, love it. Here, Rosa is nearing 50, and you can tell, despite the Bratz doll youthful appearance, because she has...
She has necklines. She has like the nerd necklines.
No, I don't know about
staring
that.
Staring down at your phone too much.
She has a natural neck, okay? Yeah. People weren't getting nerd necklines back in the 1940s.
In their teens, yeah. In the 40s.
She's aging naturally. Rosa kept a garden of orchids in her Tizapan home that she would often paint in her works. And the Oncidium species is also known as the Dama Danzante, or the Dancing Lady.
Dancing Ladies, Dancing Broads, gotcha.
Yes, exactly. Which is a, you know, callback to her early fame as that world-renowned dancer.
She's speaking to her experience herself.
Her past.
Her past.
Yes.
Her present, her future. The orchid is known to be finicky, okay? Mm-hmm. Temporal. It's already this layer that makes you realize she is hinting at something a little bit deeper than just a self-portrait. But then you notice this little photorealistic fly in the corner, a big contrast to this more illustrative style she has here in this gouache painting.
Yeah, it's almost too realistic because it feels like it actually just landed there. Take a little rest.
Yeah, and legend has it that proto-Renaissance master Giotto pranked his teacher Cimabue by painting a photorealistic fly in the studio.
That Cimabue swatted at with his medieval chancla.
His chainmail chancla rattles.
Or it was burlap or twine or some shit.
Definitely. Have you been to a Rennie Fair? It's chainmail. It's always chainmail. This was in the age of completely unrealistic medieval art, so it really freaked people out, including Cimabue, when he swatted at the painted fly, two-dimensional fly on the wall.
It feels
egg on his face, chainmail on his face.
It left a chainmail print on his face. Mm. So it really feels like she's grappling with the fleetingness of life.
And her gaze is dead on. It's not quite the Mona Lisa effect. Mm-hmm. Rosa is almost looking past you or maybe through you. Even though it's just like a painting, it's both like dead and alive. It's reality and fiction. It's what I love about it.
Beautifully put. Another stare, this time a Gen Z stare.
Shark eyes
are beaming from this girl with taco from 1947.
It's hard to look past that shark-eyed stare. Mm-hmm. What does it want from us? Why is she squeezing her tortilla so tightly? Intimidating.
Has Olmec features, almond eyes, and dark skin. And she is dressed in a pearl pink dress, wearing a flower crown with flowing ribbons.
Yeah, there's a floating gradient on those ribbons. I love the contrast of those almost reflective looking gradients against what looks to be layers and layers of translucent fabric mm-hmm. on the little girl's dress. Mm-hmm.
Beside her is not a chihuahua, but a taco-nipping cholo like Dante from Coco. Behind her, we can see townspeople gathering for a celebration in a cobblestone plaza.
It's almost like a terraced city, like yes. hillside or mountainside city, yes. which adds depth to the composition. Mm-hmm. The shark-eyed girl squeezing her tortilla is on our level. One of the girl's ribbons is the same color as the sky, so it's almost carrying that sky downwards, Ooh. Cutting through the geometric cobblestone streets.
Yeah.
Her flower crown is mirroring this sort of like tree of life thing, which I actually have a lot of questions about.
We're getting to that.
Okay. The festivities on the plaza are one terrace up, and then above that terrace are brutalist looking buildings also stacking towards the sky. Mm-hmm. And there's also a cathedral even further off in the distance. So you get all of these layers of life in one composition. We got some matching hats here. We got a lot of people celebrating. And then a guy taking a little stroll down the cobblestone streets yes. away from the crowd.
Yep.
Take a little smoke break. It's also in a skeleton.
Yeah.
In a skeleton outfit.
Skelly suit. Yes.
He's taking a little smoke break. It's 10 minute smoke break. But what's the tree situation wind feature thing there?
Above Skelly suit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is a great question. And actually,
it's got two cats.
Yeah, I couldn't find any concrete information on the structure. So,
one bull.
We asked Reddit. Some speculated that it might be the Voladores de Pampantla, which is a bunch of men jumping off a giant pole.
Did you also get some like snarky comments like, Señor, esto es un Wendy's?
No.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
I got a really mean meme.
Okay.
Which was to be expected, and honestly, it was just the one. But anyway, other people were saying that this was a tree of life.
That was a really funny Reddit joke, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it?
Everybody says that on Reddit.
I've seen you say that, and I've only seen it a couple times.
Whatever.
We're on different.
You're following the right Reddit.
We're a different Reddit.
You're not Redditing the right Reddits.
Okay. All right. So another Redditor chimed in. Quote: Es un poste para fuegos artificiales. Le llamamos castillo. Los cohetes hacen girar las figuras. It's a fireworks pole, and we call it a castle. The rockets make the figures spin. Mm. So fucking cool. Never heard of it in my life. Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. This looks like the modern equivalent of maybe what that was.
Yes.
In the 40s. It's evolved. These are more evolved.
Exactly. Yeah. So she probably was seeing a bare bones version.
And you can see the little smoke clouds in the sky. So I think that's correct.
Yes. So I think that person is correct. 30 miles north of Ciudad de Mexico.
Mexico City.
Ciudad de Mexico. Is the city of Tultepec, the firework capital of Mexico. And as it turns out, every March, there's a festival for Saint John of God or patron saint of firework makers.
Makes sense. Checks
fireworks
out.
Fireworks makers.
Name checks out.
Patrono
Another
de los
Reddit phrase people say.
Pirotecnicos. Okay. Yeah. So this tradition goes all the way back to Yule colonial times when Tultepec was known for its gunpowder production because the area was rich in saltpeter. There's several events. The first one is the burning of the firework castles. Mm. And they are anywhere from 80 to 100-ish feet tall. So extremely flammable shit. They're made of wood, reed, and paper.
Multiple deaths, I assume.
You know what, actually, yes, this has resulted in a lot of deaths. They continue it every year. Yeah, they continue it every year.
Mono's not really full, you know what I mean? The mono's missing some digits.
It does happen. Yeah. It does. So part of the design is placing certain fireworks so that they make the castle spin or move or different figures.
Much better than like the bottle rockets sort of situation we have in our hometown.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, this is much more creative.
We hide.
Worth risking your digits for, I would say this is. So then there's the second event, which is the oldest tradition. It's the Parade of the Bulls.
Okay.
So paper mache bulls full of fireworks and you light them up.
Terrifying.
They blow up. Yeah. Okay. It's gorgeous. Really amazing photographs, but again, extremely flammable, highly dangerous.
Still probably better than real bulls, I will say.
Yeah, it's actually inspired by Pamplona, Spain, the running of the bulls.
Yeah.
But they're like, hey, make it paper mache.
I will take my chance with the fireworks.
So this festival seems super plausible, but it makes me wonder, you know, why did Rosa choose to depict this little girl before all of the fun festivities? But either way, it's a beautiful painting, and I think Rosa just really liked to depict little girls in fruit dresses. And then we have another little girl in a frou-frou dress with big almond eyes.
This time, no shark eyes, though. They're
more almondy.
Serene
almonds.
Still waters without sharks.
So this was the first painting we ever saw of roses, and never did we think that we would be covering it 6 years later.
Life is a highway, Stephanie. Yes. You gotta ride it all night long with Rafink at the wheel.
Yeah. Okay. So this gouache painting is called Girl with Doll from 1943.
This girl is holding a unibrowed Zapotecan woman, basically a Frida Kahlo doll.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
While another doll, which kind of looks like a bootleg polymer clay Gumby and Pokey, but with a sombrero, serenades her. It's a good example of how her work can be low-key brilliant. Mm-hmm. Very eye-catching, why our eyes were caught when we first saw it in Boston. Mm-hmm. Because like her crazy town butterfly Bratz doll self-portrait with the Popoteca Popopo, and it's waddle, I tried. There are two compositions going on here. First is the most obvious, the girl who is dressed in a perfectly pink ruffled dress, hair tied back, blankly staring off. Once again, not giving shark eyes, holding her Frida doll, but not like in her hands, more like holding it like her hands are a terrace,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
A terrace that you would stand upon if your doll was a real person. And that flips the composition, and you get a totally different read on it. The pale pink dress reads as sun-bleached weather stucco. The stoic girl here starts to look very building-esque.
Mm.
The blue of the walls become the blue of the sky and the blue of the ocean. And the stippling here cuts vertically, so it almost starts to feel like rain.
Oh, yeah.
The Frida doll leans against her crossed hands to listen to the bootleg Gumby and Pokey singing a beautiful tune, soaking up those oceanside vibes. Mm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. I wonder if it's a little Frida doll's birthday and bootleg Gumby and Pokey are singing happy birthday, you know, las mañanitas.
Mm.
Yeah, like Maria Félix in El Rapto. Estas son las mañanitas que cantaba Rey David. Hoy es tu día santo, te la canto aquí. Despierta, mi bien despierta, mira que ya amaneció. Wow, the way Russell's looking at me is, I've never seen the whites of your eyes that much. Okay, we put away.
Thank you. Oh, I like it.
This serenade is out of love, Russell.
Okay.
You should be thanking
me. Thank you.
Just like you're doing. You know, not many Americanos can say that they have ever been serenaded
by a beautiful...
You are like those
Latina.
Mexican Golden Age movie stars. You get serenaded in those old-timey videos.
Okay, do you have a question? You're going to leave the hat on the rest of this recording.
What do you think? Rosa was friends with Maria Félix and Frida Kahlo. And I find it interesting that she is commemorating her friend, definitely Frida, if not Maria as well. But it also foreshadows how important Frida would come to be, especially to las morritas, you know, the young girls, the young chicanas. And we've talked about Frida's unique identity in her episode. And I think that's really powerful to see this young girl holding onto that symbol of Frida, whether or not it was intentional. As far as Miguel and Rosa, they did not end on a happy note. Mm. Miguel left Rosa for Rocio, a young dancer.
Similar name and a dancer. It's got to hurt. It's got to hurt.
And yeah, we will get into that in our next episode with Becca. Adriana Williams wrote a biography of Rosa and Miguel that was published in the 90s. And there is some juicy, juicy stuff in there.
Like telenovela level stuff.
Yeah.
Talking parrots, betrayal.
Yeah, all that. But Rosa channeled that pain into one of her most iconic self-portraits, unlike the ones before, and we just saw it alongside Frida, Varo, and Elsie at the Museo de Arte Moderno.
It really holds its own.
It does. And in this one, we can see just past her hips, she is striking a dance pose in a turbulent landscape, and her hands are covering her ears, attempting to drown out the chaos. Her nails are done, and she's wearing a cute red ascot and matching lipstick, and she's wearing a fitted forest green sweater and a black skirt.
Her hair is kind of like blowing in that psychological vortex, mirroring the sway of her skirt,
too.
It's this nice, like, wiggly mirror that's happening.
Yes, and there's dozens of objects floating around her, including butterflies, once again, but one in particular is wearing a skeleton mask and a crown.
It's a little bit like a Death Head's Hawk Moth, you know? I'm sure at least one of our listeners I'm talking to you. Has that tattoo.
Has a tattoo.
If it's you, let us know. Okay. I just have a feeling.
There are two green hummingbirds, one alive and one dead. And the deceased one is tied to the arm of a big Posada-esque dancing skeleton wearing a pink garter.
He also has his hand on her head.
Yes, like they're there. They're there.
Comforting her. But there's like a dead hummingbird right in her face. So.
Right. And speaking of hummingbirds, they are very significant in Mexico because they can symbolize resilience, joy, or they can be messengers of the dead. Mm. The Aztecs believed that they were the souls of fallen warriors, which honestly checks out because apparently hummingbirds are very vicious and they use their little beaks as little swords.
They're more metal than the death head hawk moth. So, you know, if one of you listeners does have that tattoo, you know what you have to do? You got to cover it up with the hummingbird.
Well,
and explain to your tattoo artist why.
And well, it depends on what you're going for.
Yeah, there's no skull, but they're vicious.
Yeah, they have their sword.
They really like that sweet stuff. If you get in the way, they're gonna peck through you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. So the hummingbirds, I think here they mean that a battle has been lost. There's pain. You can see the Palacio de Bellas Artes where Miguel and Rosa were at the dance school.
It's also where Rosa pulled out a little pistol and aimed it at Rocio.
A pew pew. Okay?
Showing a little bit too much of her stars and stripes. A little bit of that American lineage.
No.
Crossing borders, all right? Maybe keep the pistol in your pants.
No.
Also, methinks. That little cowboy skeleton wielding a pistol?
Yeah.
Might be a little bit of Rosa in there.
You
know, she might have personified with that little cowboy skelly.
This is a self-portrait.
Pew, pew. Locked and loaded.
At the bottom, you can see a bust of a figure. You see the head, neck, and chest. And this figure has a breast and a big, fluffy ponytail and a big pink ribbon.
It's like a gourd or maybe a peanut face.
Yes.
Okay, the ponytail is at the end of the gourd, where the stem would be.
But the face. The face
a
is
bit
a peanut.
Early Magritte, to be honest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Really weird.
Yeah.
Rosa was bitter.
Much
okay?
like a gourd.
And
yeah.
This is, are gourds bitter?
I don't know. I assume so.
I don't think so. Well, unless you... Anyway, I'm getting hungry. Rosa was bitter, okay? And this is obviously a derogatory depiction of Rocio, who actually Rosa had been referring to as one of the ponytail bunch.
I just see her, like, painting away, just, like, stabbing her paintbrush into the canvas, being like, peanut head.
No.
Ponytail peanut head. No. Gourd face bitch.
Gourd face. Is this the new gap tooth bitch? If you know, you know. Okay. No, she's more controlled. She'd be like, G-O-U-R-D.
So control my line.
Blend it in. Blend it in.
Just peacefully, calmly painting it. Peacefully, very articulately drawing the little concave line.
Looking at peanuts.
Gourd face.
The bowl of peanuts.
Fucking gourd face. Stupid ponytail. Stupid
ponytail bitch.
Head. Stupid ponytail peanut head gourd bitch. Can I say bitch? I don't know if I can say
I don't know if you can. Anyway.
I'm being Rosa.
You're being Rosa. Oh, we're okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm not calling Rocio. Confusing. Rosa of Rocio.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm sure Rocio was a nice lady.
I'm sure she was lovely and talented.
Yeah. She looked like a good dancer too.
She looked like a good dancer.
She's striking some poses. She looks talented.
I'm sure she was.
Yeah.
I'm sure she was. Okay. So we also see a small figure dressed just like Big Rosa dancing with a clock. We can tell that Rosa is really feeling her age. Okay. She's 57 now. And between the Bratz doll almond eyes, you actually see two wrinkles.
Yeah.
Little wrinkles.
I think they're called 11s.
They're called onces.
Yeah.
All jokes aside, she must have been devastated, losing her partner, her co-collaborator of almost 30 years.
Historia muy, muy importante para México.
Me ha dejado apreciar un poco más la danza.
Now, more and more, we are finally seeing Rosa's work included in exhibitions, giving her the credit she deserved all along.
Tenía una visión muy interesante para el tiempo en el que estaba.
In 2011, a solo show in Mexico City and Puebla featured over 200 works, including paintings, photography, and costume designs.
So many works that we have never seen and cannot find images
of. We would love to see them.
Yeah.
So if you have any connections, please send them our way.
Yeah.
In 2012, her self-portraits and Rolandrams were featured in the show In Wonderland, The Surrealist Adventures of Women Artists in Mexico and the United States, at the LACMA, just a stone's throw away from her childhood home of Azusa.
Mm. So many Vaughns. So many Spartan
no.
finals now. The twinkle in that mogul grocer's eye. The yellow twinkle.
The okay.
Fully realized.
Okay.
And her work also made an appearance in the 2024 Venice Biennale. I think that's what you wanted me to say.
Yes, yes. And like we mentioned, she's almost always on display at the Crystal Bridges Museum of Art in Arkansas.
Yeah, and she was no slouch in her lifetime either. She was in the unprecedented 20 centuries of Mexican art at the MoMA in New York City.
New York City
in 1940. Her rosagrams were included in the highly influential surrealist journal Dine in 1942. And in 1952, she had her own solo show at the Gallery Souza in Mexico City.
Sí, de Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico City.
So Rosa was more than just a golden-hued body ex-dancer with an art hobby. When you look at Rosa's work in totality, she dabbles in one area and then moves on to the next. She is not a master artist, whatever that is, and she never intended to be one.
And she didn't need to be one.
Right.
Art isn't only about mastery, it's about exploration. She's like more of a blender, she's a connector. And you can see in her work the accumulation of experiences, her curiosity, the different lives that she's lived, mm-hmm. meeting the surrealists before they formalize their identity, seeing firsthand the vision of the Mexican muralists, getting to know Frida Kahlo and her deeply personal approach to making work. That helped bring Rosa's vision together, which honestly is like more indebted to that collaborative type of performance I think she learned from dance.
Yep.
It's way different than like the solitary work of a singular artist. Like she was learning from all these different artists, like all types of artists too.
Right. Rosa has this line that I think really summarizes her work. Quote, "A dancer's brain is not in her feet. You've got to think about your work. And what's more, the audience has got to be made to feel what you are thinking. If you're supposed to be a lily swaying in the wind or any one of those things one might think of, you must behave as any one of those things would behave."
Basically, like, embody the thing, lose yourself in the thing.
And it could be why we read her work as having anemoic tendencies.
Yeah, it's like tapping into this greater timeless creative energy, if you want to go woo.
A little woo won't hurt.
A little more woo, more than too much woo, probably wooed. So, Stephanie, what's the lesson here? What's the lesson here from all of this?
Follow
all the stuff we just covered.
Follow your heart. Mm. Follow your passion. Mm. Whole asset. Okay. Or you can follow your feet, I guess, in Rose's case. Don't go by 4 or 5 different names.
Mm.
You know, I know you want to keep it fresh, but records. So,
it was like 3. I think I counted 3 names.
3, 4,
maybe 4.
Names.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway,
draw realistic flies wherever you go to just freak people out.
That too.
Freak them out.
Keep it fresh.
Okay.
Keep it interesting for yourself and for others.
Yeah.
Even
cover up your Death Hawk moss, I think that was the name of it, with an even metaller hummingbird tattoo.
Okay.
I should have said tattoo. I don't think I said tattoo to begin with.
Yeah, that sounds scary.
Yeah, don't just cover up a death head hawk moss.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So make art wherever you go. And if that art happens to be singing Las Mañanitas to someone that you love, so be it. Be open to other forms of expression.
Okay.
Right? Forget about fine craft. You know, just do whatever scratches that art itch.
Polymer clay, for example. Maybe
right
make
here.
A polymer clay Gumby and Pokey or a polymer clay version of whatever you're working on.
Okay. So once again, we're following up this episode with our full chat with Becca that is not just on Rosa. It's also on El Chamaco and his recent retrospective.
Which we loved. It's amazing.
We fucking loved it. I'm still thinking about
it. And Becca had she was so much fun.
She was.
So much insight.
So much insight.
And there's like basically no research on Rosa.
Very little. And the thing is we definitely don't have access to it here.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually, I mean, she has more access being in Mexico, OVS, the Mexican archives. However, we were very lucky to have her, hope to have her on again. I think you guys are going to enjoy our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We also want to shout out the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Yes.
Great group of folks over there. They were kind enough to let us film there for our episode.
Whatever preconceived notions you have about Arkansas, just reserve it for the rest of Arkansas. Like, that area is really rad.
Northwest Arkansas is different from the rest of the
state. I can't really speak to the rest of Arkansas, to be honest.
I've heard other parts are cool. And you can go to Crystal Bridges and see thousands of other incredible works, including many of the artists we've covered on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie James Marshall, Agnes Pelton, Dorothea Tanning.
Yasuo Kuniyoshi.
Yes,
yeah.
That guy. And then a couple more from our great surrealist paint-off. I can't think of them off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Americans. And they're like interesting pieces. They're not like the ones that you've seen everywhere. Mm-hmm. all the time. They're, I don't want to say, they're not a B-side. They're maybe
a deep cut.
A deep cut. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Go to Crystal Bridges, make a weekend out of it. It's not that far of a drive for many cities surrounding it. Mm. Little road trip.
Remember to rate, review, and subscribe so we can reach more friends, listeners, ear buddies like yourselves. Don't you want the Ear Buddy Collective to grow?
Only 5 stars, please.
I sure do.
Only 5 stars.
But yeah. Go to artslicepod.com to sign up for our free newsletter so you can get alerts for our latest episodes, sans the algorithms.
Right. And we could always use your support in creating these episodes, right? So grabbing some merch if you can, mm-hmm. or join our Patreon at patreon.com/artslicepod.
A little t-shirt purchase or two?
Yes.
Is about the same as what a $2 a month patron contribute per year.
Yes. Any way that you can help, even if it's just watching, mm-hmm. if it's liking, it's sharing, like we honestly appreciate from the bottom of our little corazones how much you all have supported us.
You all know the algorithms are fucked right now.
They are.
We're
so
just gonna say it. They're fucked.
That and
the reach is like basically non-existent. So if you can like burn it on a CD, pass it to a friend, maybe that CD will end up in like a museum one day after this whole society
has collapsed. Podcast museum.
You know, there's some Art Slice on there. There's some Mr. Beast. That's his name. Mr. Beast.
That, he's a YouTube. He's not.
Whatever.
What is it? Late stage capitalism media museum.
Yeah.
Hold on. Okay. So you were saying the algorithms are fucked. Well, so are many of our wallets. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we super appreciate you buying a t-shirt from us, stickers. Yes. We so appreciate every single
thing. Yeah, we know things
are
tight right now. Mm-hmm. Like we're definitely feeling it too. So every time we see a little t-shirt sale come through, our
little hearts skip a beat.
Our hearts skip a beat.
They go boop.
In a healthy way.
Boop. No, right. We're fine. We're healthy.
We'll be back soon with that episode on Rosa and Miguel with Vekka.
Yep.
And yeah, don't forget. Go on.
I don't know. Your kid could not have created Rolandrams or any kind of gram, maybe an Instagram, depending on how old your child is.
You can do better.
I can do better.
Yeah, give me another one.
Well, first of all, I also just wanted to say that if you watch the episode, let us know if you liked it. Let us know what artworks inspired you or didn't. If you hated it, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, Rosa's interesting because I think like you take one look at it and sometimes she looks like maybe she's not the best painter in the world, but then you spend some more time with it and you're like, okay, this is pretty legit.
Yeah.
So she was an interesting one for me. It took me a while to like get into her work, but yeah.
So if you spend some time with the episode and have thoughts, we would love to hear them. artslicepod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You know, DM us or in the comments.
Right.
So many ways to find us. So we would love to hear your little words. Okay. Anyway, what were you saying? Oh, well,
I was giving you a second chance at the...
Your kid could not have...
Yeah, because I've been doing it for a while.
You're pretty good
at it. I'm not cutting this. This is staying in.
All right.
Extending the...
Can you please stop so I can think?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Go on. Your kid cannot have.
I don't know, man. Your kid could not have been a Mexican-American woman in the 20th century who was a Broadway dancer and then somehow found her way to Mexico City and became a painter and all those things. And this is the worst one I've ever done.
Yeah, I think
please
so.
Cut this.
All right. Okay. I'm not cutting it. We'll see you next time, folks. Signing off.
Your kid couldn't have done that. That's what it is. I don't know why you had to make it complicated.
Oh, yeah, RIP Shifty. That's what we should have signed off on.
Your kid could not have been Shifty.
Your kid couldn't have been Shifty and shouldn't have been Shifty because he had some drug problems. Bye.